What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Welcome to Invention, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Invention. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And Robert, I'm going to start off with a question that may seem totally unrelated to today's topic, but we'll get there. How often do you encounter a belief in fate in the modern world, in this technological society that we live in?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, it certainly shows up in narratives that we encounter and even put a great deal of thought into, you know, in our modern society. But in terms of like personally believing in fate, I don't know. I mean, there are certainly various, particularly I'm thinking of various sort of new age belief systems that put a lot of emphasis on sort of setting your own fate and manifesting something in the future and therefore like creating this line of fate that you're going to follow. But so many other like religious worldviews are going to depend upon like the importance of free will. Mm-hmm. You're making a choice to do, you know, to go this way or go that way. And perhaps things are more or less on the rails once you have made that choice. But then I feel like in the secular world, there's more of an understanding of chaos and and chance. And maybe we exaggerate our chances regarding various things. But for the most part, we realize that we're kind of at the whim of the universe.
I feel like it shows up some in some contexts more than others. Like you still very often get the feeling of people falling in love and believing they were meant for each other.
That's true. You do encounter it there.
That's like a certain kind of belief in fate. And I would say that belief in fate is not exactly the same thing as the sort of personality trait of fatalism, which you do encounter sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, when you get into the whole, you know, question of free will, which we certainly have quite a bit on our other show, Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you know, there's always that that view of looking at things is just completely, you know, everything is predetermined by your environment and the brain, and that we're, you know, we're not, the argument that we're not even necessarily making any choices. We're just on this trajectory. And I guess you could very much align that worldview with an idea of fate. You know, what else could we be? What else could we do being what we are?
Yeah, but then again, you have the idea that I mean, it's very common belief among, say, philosophers and physicists and stuff that there's this principle of compatibilism, which says that, well, maybe we do live in a physically deterministic universe, and yet nevertheless, because of some features of the way we conceive of free will, the idea of determinism in physics and free will in our lives are not really actually in conflict.
And of course, I mean, there are going to be cultural differences here as well. I mean, certainly in the United States, there's still – this idea of American exceptionalism, and combine that with celebrity worship and celebrity culture, and you have some kind of weird warped takes on what fate is and how it works. Is there just sort of this idea in society that you are, you're destined for greatness, or are you defying the fates by grasping after your own greatness?
Well, this all came to mind because we're talking about scissors today. So what's the connection here? Well, I was thinking about how the ancient Greeks were in many ways really into fate and destiny. And I think you'd probably find some counter strains of thought running through ancient Greece. But it was a common folk belief among the ancient Greeks that a person's life was already a sort of pre-written text, decided in total for them at the moment of their birth. And then a more limited version of this was that even if all the exact details of your life weren't predetermined, the length of one's life and the time and the nature of one's death were all decided in advance, and even the gods couldn't intervene. But if even the gods couldn't intervene to change your fate, who's deciding your fate in the first place? If it's not Zeus, then who? And here is where a trio of excellent creepy characters from mythology comes in. According to one popular form of Greek religion and folk belief, the deciders of each person's individual destiny are the morai, or the three fates. These are depicted as three divine women spinning out our lives as strands of thread or twine. And they've each got their own name and personality. So there is Clotho, the spinner, who creates the thread of life upon her spindle. And then there's Lachesis, the allotter, who measures out a certain length of the thread of your life. And then there is Atropos, the inflexible or the inevitable, who makes the decision final and secures the circumstances of each person's death by snipping off the thread of life with a pair of scissors or shears.
Yeah, they get worse as they proceed,
They do, yeah. There's a great line. The poet John Milton wrote about them in the poem Lycidas, in the section where I think he's sort of talking about the cruel ironies of fate. And he writes that, just when we think we're about to come to some great reward, quote, and think to burst out into sudden blaze, comes the blind fury with the abhorred shears and slits the thin-spun life.
Ha. Huh. Now, one of the interesting things about this, to bring everything back to invention for a second, is that we're looking at yet another example of technology, and in this case, essentially manufacturing, like linear manufacturing, being used as a metaphor for something about life, for understanding the mysteries of the universe.
Yeah, coming to see the most fundamental attributes of human life itself through our ancient technological innovations, like the wheel. Mm-hmm. How many metaphors about life and death involve the wheel? And now, spinning, an ancient textile technology. But I love the idea of Atropos, the inevitable, because it's so spooky and empowering. The next time you're scrapbooking, or the next time you're wrapping Christmas presents and you've got that pair of scissors in your hand, you think of yourself as Atropos, the inflexible, the blind fury with the abhorred shears, who cannot be reasoned with, cannot be bargained with, who doesn't feel pity, who will not stop until the snip.
Stephen King wrote an excellent novel years back titled Insomnia, about a man who's having increasing trouble getting to sleep, experiencing insomnia. But he begins to sort of waken up to all these sort of supernatural goings on in the town and in the world, just outside of the vision of the waking people. Mm-hmm. And three fates essentially show up in that story as well, with their authentic Greek names. But instead of being these three women, they're displayed as three little bald doctors with scissors.
Well, I think that's appropriate. Little bald doctors are about creepy enough to match this myth.
And it's actually rather – I don't know to what extent King was thinking about this, but one of the things we're going to end up discussing in this episode is that, of course, shears and scissors are used not only for domestic purposes but also for surgical purposes.
Right.
So it makes sense that both these sort of archetypical homemakers from Greek mythology would have the scissors at their disposal, but also some sort of an imagined doctor as well. So I was looking around for other examples of scissor-related mythology, and this is not an exhaustive list, but a few different examples came up from different points in time. some certainly more modern than others. One of my favorites has always been the English nursery bogey, the red-legged scissor man.
Ooh.
There's a whole rhyme about the red-legged scissor man. And basically, this is just like a vile goblin creature that will come and cut off your thumbs if you keep sucking your thumb.
Oh, okay. So we talked about English nursery bogeys back in our Stuff to Blow Your Mind episode about Jenny Greenteeth.
Yeah.
Where I think generally the idea is that many of these stories are about monsters that were made up in order to teach children a lesson or to discourage a prohibited activity.
Yes, to scare them into obedience, where you're like, look, I'm tired of arguing with you. Just look at it this way. If you don't stop sucking your thumb, a monster is going to come and cut those thumbs off.
Yeah, if you don't stop playing by the filled-in marl pits, then Jenny Greenteeth is going to pull you under.
Now, another example that came up is an entity known as Kuchisaki Onna. This is the Japanese slit-mouth woman, a spirit that's said to brandish a pair of scissors and also has like a gaping slit mouth, like her cheek, you know, has been cheeks have been cut open on either side, which I think is also called a Glasgow grin, you know, like the Joker has in the Dark Knight Return,
yeah.
Which was the second Batman movie.
The Dark Knight, yeah.
And basically the idea is like she appears to you and then she'll ask you if she is beautiful and you just have to say yes, because if you say no, she'll slash you with her scissors.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, I was reading a little about this. I read that the idea has caused a public panic as recently as 1979. And the idea itself dates back possibly to the Edo period, but it's very much an example of the overall Japanese vengeful ghost motif. And that motif, of course, goes a long ways back and is a staple in Chinese mythology and other East Asian myth cycles as well, just, you know, often without the scissors.
Now, I can't remember, were there any scissors or shears among the possessed demon tools that we talked about in an episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind not too long ago?
I don't recall specifically, but I would almost assume they would be on the list.
Uh-huh.
Now, another example I came to was I was reading Spindle, Shuttle, and Scissors, Ambiguous Power in the Grimm Brothers Tales by Celia Catlett Anderson. And the author points out that, quote, the Teutonic tradition domesticates the Greek mythology in which spindle and scissors are personified. And so these implements factor into numerous of the Grimm Brothers tales, aiding heroines and villains alike with varying magical properties. And so they're frequently instruments we see here in some of these other examples of feminine power and a counterpoint to the weaponry of male characters that you see in, say, the Grimm Brothers work.
I often notice this in fiction, where when scissors are wielded in a threatening way, you know, not just on, you know, thread or whatever, but when they're wielded as a weapon, it's very often by women against men in movies and stuff. I think about the Hitchcock movie Dial M for Murder.
Oh, yeah. That was a classic. I was looking up some famous scissor kills, and that one definitely made the list. More recently, Jordan Peele's Us features scissors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then there's a wonderful scene, like the most memorable scene in the movie The Exorcist Part 3. Do you remember this sequence?
Horrifying.
Yeah, there's it's not even gory. It's just a wonderful jump scare involving a gigantic pair. I think they're supposed to be like autopsy or necropsy scissors.
Yeah, though, for shearing bones maybe.
Though I think they're ultimately an exaggerated prop. Certainly listeners can write in and correct me on this, but I believe that the shears that are displayed in that movie are way larger than anything you would actually use.
The Exorcist 3 is actually pretty scary.
Yeah, it is. It has some great parts and some wonderful actors in it as well. Brad Dourif is in it.
Yeah, he is.
And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Edward Scissorhands, the unfinished lowercase f Frankenstein with scissors for hands from Tim Burton's 1990 film classic.
I think they're deploy. I haven't seen Edward Scissorhands in a long time, but I remember it's basically like an ironic thing that he's got scissors for hands because he is a gentle soul,
right? And it's part of the metaphor of like, oh, you know, he doesn't have hands. He can't touch and have this very human part of his sensory experience because instead he has these awful scissors. But then he still manages to do beautiful things with those scissors. And I believe you had had a favorite example from a cinematic history as well.
Well, just because I can't get the Big Lebowski out of my head. I've watched it 100 times or whatever. Of course, there's the dream sequence with the big horrible, you know, the German nihilists from the band Autobahn with their giant scissors.
Yes. I actually think, the Big Lebowski example is quite interesting because they're ultimately, they show up as a manifestation, a dream manifestation of castration fear.
Uh-huh.
And again, scissors and shears are often a part of castration fear. And here we've seen all these examples of them being attributed to malevolent female entities brandishing them as a result of male myth-making throughout history.
Yeah. Well, maybe now that we have suitably over-dramatized and read a lot of myth and horror into this common household item, let's come back to the common household item and think about scissors and shears as an invention.
Oh, yeah. And I have to say, a big fan of scissors. We're a big scissor household.
Uh-huh.
My son has always been obsessed with crafting. He's 7 now, and I actually cannot remember the last time he used safety scissors or children's scissors because he's just used just straight-up kitchen scissors for the longest. It's like he prefers them. Years ago, we tried to get him to use other scissors. He's like, nope, I got to use some real scissors, Mom.
What? Yeah. He demanded the unsafe ones?
Well, I mean, he uses them safely, so I guess they are the safe scissors. But but we also, we tried to, get him like chopping vegetables pretty early too and like treating him, teaching him to be careful with these tools and to not take their sharpness for granted. So.
Oh, that's great actually. I think it's good to get kids accustomed to using blades early on in their lives. I know I encounter a lot of adults who I think are still afraid of knives in the kitchen. It hampers their ability to cook because they kind of – it looks like they're trying not to get too close to it. They're using it.
Yeah. It's kind of like trying to light a match when you're afraid of the fire that's going to spark on the end, and you end up like just, destroying match after match in an attempt to strike it.
Yeah. Okay. So when you look at a pair of scissors, what's actually going on here? I guess we don't need to explain too much about what scissors are and how they work because you've all encountered them. But we'll do the short version and mention a couple of mechanical features of scissors that you might not realize. So the basic mechanics are pretty simple. Scissors or shears could also be referred to as a kind of double lever. The two arms are usually sharpened into blades, and those blades slide directly against one another at a kind of moving point of contact as they open and close. And I guess a variation on this would be the kind of scissors that or the kinds of shears that are not sliding scissors that go back and forth across each other, but like clippers. You might see where there's like a flat surface and a blade that comes flush against it. Which is somewhat different, but also has basically the same mechanism of action. Now, the purpose, especially with the crossing blades, is to apply shear force in order to cut a target object. It might be paper, might be fabric, might be the thread of life. But a slightly less intuitive mechanical feature of scissors that I did start thinking about, and I thought this was kind of interesting. When you describe the scariest scissors from monster folktales and horror, what do they look like?
Oh, well, they tend to be those big, what I think of as big grandma fabric scissors.
Yeah, long pointy blades,
right?
But the cutting power of a pair of scissors operates like a lever, which means to have stronger cutting power, a pair of scissors should actually have long handles and short blades. And this is why when you see scissors made for cutting weak targets like paper, they can have relatively short handles and long blades. Though a tip for using scissors is that they've got the most cutting power at a point of contact really close to the fulcrum, so down closest to your fingers. On the other hand, when you see scissors or shears made for really powerful cutting of tough materials like metal or leather or thick plant matter, they tend to have longer handles and shorter blades. The longer handles function like a longer lever for more mechanical power at the cutting point. So really, the scariest scissors from our scissor nightmares and scissor horror should have short blades and long handles. That's what could really hurt you.
Yeah, and I think that's why those scissors in The Exorcist 3 are ultimately, I think, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And why you also see various forums online where people are like, what are those scissors? What do you call those scissors? And I think the answer is you call those big scary prop scissors because in reality, the scissors you would use to cut a part of a cadaver during an autopsy would be powerful, but they would not be like visibly gigantic.
Well, I don't remember. The ones I remember did seem to have long handles from the movie. Do I?
I think they did. They did. Well, they did have long handles, but I think they also had kind of like large
super
blades.
Super long blades. Yeah.
Yeah. They looked a bit like trimming shears, like you would trim on a hedge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear from all the medical professionals out there who are writing in like, no, I actually use those Exorcist 3 shears. Here's what I use them for. If that's the case, please tell us.
Yeah, yeah. We would love to hear from you.
So a question we always like to ask when we're looking at an invention is what came before? So how could we ask that about scissors? I don't know, but we'll try. Maybe we should take a break and then we'll come back and address that.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
All right, we're back. So what came before scissors? Well, I think the obvious answer here is that, you know, ultimately scissors are an evolutionary step beyond a single cutting instrument, beyond like a single blade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should stop and think again about the challenges of cutting something, say a strand of hair.
Okay.
So to use a common blade, what are you going to do? You're going to need to some way hold the hair in place for the blade to cut via that pushing force and that shear stress that we've talked about already.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a sharp razor, which is, of course, a specialized knife and nothing more, if you're going to cut close to the skin, you know, if you're shaving
mm-hmm. –
that's easy enough. The hair is basically held in place due to the close proximity to the skin, right?
Yeah.
That's just shaving in a nutshell. But if you're going to cut up further up the strand, you need to hold it in place somehow. Scissors do that. They hold the strand in place long enough for the pushing force and the shear stress to act on it via a small area, the edge of the blade.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a way, I think that forces us to stop and rethink what it is to cut anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it all comes down to, applying that pressure, applying that force, and then it's all coming down to a very thin portion of the instrument. It's also important to note that scissors allow us to make very precise cuts. And for this, I want to read just an excellent summary of this from a paper titled Modeling the Forces of Cutting with Scissors by Mavash et al. And ultimately, like, this paper gets into a lot more technical areas, but I just found this particular summary just, very, very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, scissors are possibly the most effective and precise tools for cutting of thin tissues in open and laparoscopic surgery and thin objects in daily tasks. To see this, compare cutting of a sheet of paper using a pair of scissors with that of using a sharp blade. When cutting with a blade, the paper should be firmly held, and it is difficult to make precise cuts. However, when cutting with a pair of scissors, the scissor blades themselves locally hold the paper, making it easy to have precise cuts. An interaction between scissors and an object involves two main physical phenomena, local deformation and fracture. As soon as the scissor blades contact the object is locally deformed. When the deformation reaches a certain level, fraction occurs and the object is separated.
Yeah, I think about the difference because I have tried to cut paper with a knife before. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. I mean, the paper tears. You kind of end up pushing on it, especially if the blade is dull. Even if the blade is sharp, it's hard to make straight or precise cuts with a knife. The knife kind of wants to go all over the place. It wants to curve off course and stuff.
I also often think about this with another invention that I often find irritating, and that is the big industrial paper cutter with the big like machete blade guillotine on the side.
Uh-huh.
Because like that is essentially – generally what's happening is you're being forced to cut with the entire length of the blade, with the entire length of the scissors. Mm-hmm. So of course it cuts really well down there towards the axis.
Right.
But the further up you go, it's just going to go off to the side. It's going to rip. Maybe I'm using it wrong or trying to put too much paper in there. But I always find it a frustrating experience.
Now, I was wondering about a question having to do with cutting in the ancient world and the prehistoric world. And that question is, did prehistoric hominids cut their hair? And if so, how did they do it? Because obviously you can cut hair with a knife. It just doesn't seem like the best way. I mean, if you had scissors, it'd be a lot easier.
Yeah, this is something I was thinking about a little while back as well. I think I was at the zoo, and I was thinking about all the wonderful different varieties of hair and feathers and so forth that you see on animals, but humans, like, we're the ones who can, if left to our own devices, grow enormous and ridiculous beards and grow enormously ridiculous long hair. Mm-hmm. You don't see that on, say, a gorilla or a chimpanzee. So it would make sense that as we it became more and more human, as we developed this ability to grow out ridiculous lengths of hair, we would start developing means of cutting it back.
Yeah.
Just to keep from like strangling ourselves in the night with our own matted braids,
Yeah. I mean, hair doesn't grow forever. I mean, at some point, most hair will reach a certain length where it stops growing there, and hair grows from different follicles and stuff, or it'll fall out eventually. And so we don't know exactly what fashion and grooming trends were like in the ancient world. We have some evidence from like ancient artistic depictions of other humans. Mm-hmm. Prehistoric people might not have had all the hair care practices of modern people, but there is some archaeological and artistic evidence that they did some stuff to their hair. Sometimes they took care of their hair, including a lot of indications of braiding, especially braiding of long hair in women, but sometimes cutting hair or shaving the head. Like there are a lot of depictions of prehistoric peoples that appear to have no hair on their head. So why would that be? Well, again, it's really hard to know for sure why fashion and grooming trends arise, especially in the ancient world where there are no written records. But one possibility is that cutting hair short or shaving it would help prevent infestation of parasites like lice. It would make hygiene easier, and it might possibly have been involved in sexual selection or attractiveness. This is related to the hypothesis that our hominid ancestors, like, why did they lose the thick covering of body hair that they had a few million years ago? One hypothesis is, well, they lost most of their body hair as a way of repelling parasites. And that would turn into a kind of honest advertising of hygiene and health to mates. You could say, like, look at my relatively hairless skin. No parasites hiding anywhere in there.
And yet the ability to grow a ridiculous beard
right,
remained.
Yeah. So again, we don't know. But it's possible that something like that helped push hair grooming priorities, such as cutting hair short or shaving the head or trimming the beard. But we don't know for sure. But yeah, so ancient peoples did some things to their hair. We have some evidence of that. And it seems likely that before we had good metal tools like bronze tools, they probably just used sharp knives or sharp like stone knives, maybe made from flint or obsidian or whatever. Doesn't sound very pleasant.
Well, but it does show you why they would develop, increasingly better means of doing it. You'd want it to be a more pleasant experience, and you'd want to have more, aesthetically pleasing results, especially if it was something that was involved in mate selection, which I think is not a stretch to imagine because that's the case today.
Right. We're just very fortunate today to have scissors for haircutting. Now, so the scissors we're familiar with today are usually based on what you might call the pivot model of design. And that's where the two blades are actually two separate pieces of metal. And they're connected – each one blade is connected to one handle for the fingers, and then they're joined together by a pin. And then that becomes the fulcrum of the two levers moving open and close. But an interesting design feature of the scissors of the ancient world is that they often – did not have a pivot. They did not have multiple pieces even. They're built out of a single piece of metal with no pivoting parts. Now, how would that work? Well, it's actually pretty simple if you think about it for a second. It worked on the principle of a spring.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I certainly want to come back and do an episode on springs to fully invoke coyly the spirit of springs, the gremlin of springs, so that we can consider what would a world would be like with no springs.
That is one of the best MST shorts of all time.
I'm so excited. I got to show it to my son over the weekend because he asked in the car. He'd found a little spring, and he asked. He said, "What would happen if there were no springs?"
What?
Yeah, and I was like,
straight up
asked. Yeah,
he
asked, and I was like, "Well, I have a short to show you." And so we started watching it, and he was like, "I think he's evil. I think Coily's evil." And I'm like, "No, you got to watch the whole thing. He's teaching a lesson. Everything's going to turn out okay."
He's like Clarence the Angel in It's a Wonderful Life, except instead of George Bailey, it's springs.
Exactly.
See what the world would be like. But yeah, anyway, so you can make a pair of scissors without any pivoting or moving parts out of a single piece of metal just on the principle of a spring. And this is how most ancient scissors were made. For example, I just picked one random example I found in a museum collection online. It's part of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's collection, and this is a pair of scissors from the Tang Dynasty period of China. It's dated to sometime between the 7th and 9th century. It's an ornate pair of silver scissors with partial gilding showing birds in flight and vines and branches, and it has no pivot. Instead, try to picture this. The shears they're all one piece of metal, and the handle is a rod of silver that's curved into an infinity sign or like a sideways figure eight shape, except that one of the halves of that infinity sign does not close. It's not another closed curve, but rather it turns into two straight blades shooting out that sort of cross each other. And then the handle functions as a spring. It's elastic, and it stores the mechanical energy there in the tension of the metal. And so you would sort of squeeze the infinity sign to close the blades upon each other.
Basically, think of a pair of tweezers, mm-hmm. and you have the basic like mechanics of it in mind.
Yeah.
Except instead of pinching, it brings two blades together to cut. You can also compare this to the difference between like salad tongs that are scissor-like and have the pivot to like simple tongs that are one piece of metal, with the little claw bits on each end.
Exactly right, yeah. And so not all ancient spring-based shears or scissors had an infinity-shaped handle. You could also create them with just a simple U-shaped bend, as long as it had the right elastic properties to bring the shears together. And that's what a lot of the simpler ones I've seen look like. So this was 7th to 9th century. That would be 7th to 9th century CE. Scissors and shears go back a lot farther than this. You can find them even in the very ancient world.
Yeah, we know of surgical shears and scissors used in ancient Mesopotamia. I was looking in a paper by Adamson titled Surgery in Ancient Mesopotamia, and the author points out that there was little or no difference between domestic tools and surgical tools. And this included, for instance, tweezers, which would have been used for hair removal, for remove unwanted hair from the body, which, as we've kind of already discussed, has always been an issue. But then also there were the shears or the scissors, which I believe is C or Erpu, based on this text. And these would have been, quote, coarse metal instruments mainly used for shearing animals.
But also good enough for surgery.
Yeah. And the ancient Mesopotamians were carrying out a variety of procedures, including the surgical creation of eunuchs. Mm-hmm. But also they were using trepanation at times. So, I mean, it's not like they were tepid about getting in there with their household and livestock tools to, address issues or, I guess, create issues in the human body.
Yeah. Now, the ancient Egyptians used shears as well.
Yeah. I was looking at Encyclopedia of Hair, A Cultural History by Victoria Shero. And she points out that the ancient Egyptians had scissors as far back as 1500 BCE. And, you know, they would use these tools and other tools to cut hair and address hair, along with combs, hairpins, and various hair removal devices that and I'm assuming those we're talking about tweezers as well.
Mm-hmm. I was reading a similar thing about shears from Iron Age Europe in the collection of the British Museum. A few of the items I found there that were like versions of shears or scissors seem to also have been used to cut hair. At least that's the current interpretation by the curators there. And they were commonly found among the grave goods of people, especially it seems like relatively high status people. So you're a guy who got buried in first century Roman Britain or something, you might have a pair of iron shears in your grave goods.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you want to look good for your funeral. And then I also found a cool example from the ancient Roman times, the forfex, they were called. And this consisted of two blades on a common metal loop, essentially the spring-loaded shears or scissors that we were discussing earlier. And by the way, there was also a Roman gladiator class known as a scissor, meaning to cut. But apparently very little was ultimately known about it, and none of the theories involve a gladiator with like a big pair of dumb scissors. In fact, the depictions I saw or the interpretations are that it had something like a pendulum-shaped blade on the end of like a tube that was fitted over one of the gladiator's arms.
Sick.
Yeah, I mean, pretty. I mean, if you're into gladiatorial combat, it still sounds pretty cool. The thing was, I wouldn't put it above the Romans to have sent somebody out with a pair of livestock shears to try and battle somebody with a net and a trident. But as far as I can tell, there's no evidence that they ever did that.
Okay, time for a little exploration of the word scissors. Good word, because is there a singular scissor? Is that a word?
Isn't that what happens when you take a pair of kitchen scissors and you snap them in half, you know, the kind that where the pivot unlocks?
I have one scissor and another scissor here.
Yeah, and I must put both scissors into the dishwasher for the evening.
No, it is not like that. There is a word scissor, but it's a verb, right? Okay, you can scissor something, you can cut up a piece of paper. It seems to be a new coinage. It just comes from the word scissors.
For instance, if I sleep with a body pillow, I might scissor the body pillow with my legs.
Okay, you could do that too. There was an interesting little article on the word scissors by the editors of Merriam-Webster a while back, and they point out that scissors is an example of what's known as a plurali tantum, an all plural, a word in which a singular object is represented by a plural form word, and it's grammatically treated as a plural form word, right? Like you say, the scissors are on the table, even though it's just one pair of scissors.
Oh, yes.
Are is for the plural verb. And this isn't always the case, but it happens with a lot of objects that I notice are like bilaterally symmetrical. And so like pants or trousers, that's plurali tantum, right?
Yeah.
There's no pant.
But see, that really puts you in a bind, because what if you come into a room and on the table there's a half a pair of kitchen scissors and there is a half a pair of pants?
Uh-huh.
Like, it would be easier to say somebody left a scissor and a pant on this table.
Right.
But instead you have to, you know, go the extra distance to describe what you're actually seeing.
Yeah. Another example, glasses or spectacles. There is such thing as a singular spectacle, but that means something different.
Hmm. But with glass, I mean, you do. It is a glass. It is. Well, it's not a looking glass.
It's a piece of glass.
It's a piece of glass. Yeah, it's true.
A singular spectacle. Now, there is such a thing as a singular lens for one eye, but that's not a spectacle.
That's a monocle. Yeah.
Other examples of plurali tantums. These are not ones that are bilaterally symmetrical. But how about feces?
Yeah.
Entrails.
Mm-hmm.
Riches.
Mm-hmm.
Alms. There's no singular of any of these words. So the word in English scissors is derived from the old French cissoirs, I think, which means scissors or shears, which comes from the vulgar Latin scissorium, which means a cutting instrument.
And this would have been the key to the Roman gladiatorial class.
Yeah, I think that's right. Now, the English spelling of scissors was changed at one point to include a C, so SCI in scissors. Now, why would that be? Well, that's probably because English linguists incorrectly assumed that the word was derived from the Latin terms starting with SCI that have to do with splitting or cutting, the words that ultimately probably give us the SCI root in the word science, from the Latin scire, meaning to know, related to the idea of cutting because you, when you know something, you make distinctions, you separate, you dissect.
Yes, you must take it apart and figure out how it works.
Right. So the moral of the story is that knowledge will cut you. One more weird fact I came across. Apparently, according to some dictionaries of usage, in the 19th century, a common exclamation of frustration in English was, "Oh, scissors." I've never come across this in the wild.
Like, "Oh, scissors."
Right.
Or could you adapt it and be like, "What the scissors?" All right. On that note, we're going to take one more break. And when we come back, we will discuss the legacy of scissors.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
All right, we're back.
All right, so we've been talking about scissors. Scissors, of course, became a very common household implement used in, you know, they're used in professional settings and household settings. There are sort of general scissors, and then there are very specialized scissors. Of course, we've mentioned that, like, scissors that need to be, you know, powerful for cutting through heavy-duty stuff like metals will often be designed with, like, long handles and short blades. But there are also other special designs for scissors that have arisen in the modern world, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly, if you look at medical scissors,
yeah,
there are many different varieties to aid in a plethora of specific surgical tasks. So you have stitch scissors, you have suture scissors, you have umbilical scissors, you have operating scissors, cuticle scissors, nail scissors, etc. And that's not even getting into scissor-like instruments that are more about pinching or clamping, such as hemostats. And then, of course, we have the world of crafting, where you have so many different varieties of scissors as well.
Robert, do you know what pinking shears are? I know that word, but I don't know what it does.
These are little tiny ones, right?
Are they?
I think so. Or maybe I'm confusing them, but aren't these the ones that you use on aren't these for, like, plants?
Oh, I don't think so. I think they've got some kind of
I'm thinking of pruning
maybe
shears.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about it if we don't know what they are.
No,
I know they're a thing.
We do not pretend to have all knowledge of all scissors. We're not scissor masters here.
The people out there in crafts that might use pinking shears, they've got like ripply blades or something.
Oh, well, you know, like the alligator type scissors because that's the thing. You have varying sizes of crafting scissors, just as you have varying sizes of medical scissors, determining on what you're cutting and with the length of the cut, the precision of the cut, and then also you have the various designs they may cut, the sort of alligator toothed serrated blade scissors that allow you to leave behind a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ultimately useless for anything else but cutting, making a cool pattern when you cut.
I'm sure somebody's come up with a good use for them. Now, another one is trauma shears. I think this is pretty interesting. Shears that are specially designed to be able to cut through heavy-duty stuff while at the same time not stabbing or poking people.
Oh, like cutting clothing from an injured individual.
Exactly. They might be used by, say, a paramedic responding to a medical incident where you need to get somebody's clothes off real quick to treat a wound or something, mm-hmm. or even just see what's wrong with them,
right.
to get under there and see the problem. But maybe they're wearing heavy-duty jeans or something like that, or you can't move them, so you just cut through the clothes. So they're in an angle that makes it easier to cut through clothes without your hand getting in the way. But then also they've got like just a little barrier at the bottom so that they're not stabbing or cutting your skin while you're going along trying to cut them off, even if the clothes are tight. But another great example of life-saving scissors, I guess this would be the exact opposite of the abhorred shears of Atropos. These would be the jaws of life.
Now, this is interesting because, of course, prior to this episode, I had heard of the jaws of life, of course. And, mm-hmm. It's just kind of like a common refrain of like, oh, you're going to have to get the jaws of life. Sometimes even used as a joke, weirdly enough, where someone's going to need to be removed from some sort of like a vehicle or something, get the jaws of life. And the thing is, I always imagined the jaws of life as being an instrument for prying something open.
Mm-hmm.
But they are ultimately more like scissors than I gave them credit.
Well, it's actually both. It depends on what you call the jaws of life, but there are hydraulic tools for doing both of those things.
Okay.
So I would consider the jaws of life not only a great invention, but a great example of branding, because how can you not remember that name?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the company decided to start calling them jaws of life, that was a smart move. But what are they? So technically, the jaws of life is a term referring to a set of hydraulic cutting tools that are used to help extract people who are trapped in hard enclosures, usually metal enclosures. Most often, this is going to be people who are trapped inside cars after auto accidents. So you picture the scene to understand the problem. A car has been in a high-velocity freeway collision or maybe wrecked on a racetrack or anything like that, and it's partially crushed. And there are passengers inside the car who are injured but still alive. First responders need to be able to get the passengers out so they can get medical treatment, so they can stop bleeding and all that. But because of the way the car was deformed in the accident, the doors won't open. So how do you get them out? Well, there was an inventor and auto company founder named George Hurst who thought about this problem. It was in the 1960s. Supposedly, the idea came to him after he was watching an auto race event where there was a crash, and it took the emergency team a long time to get the driver out of the damaged car. And when you're injured in a car crash, that time waiting can be the difference between life and death. There's something first responders talk about this, like sort of like the magic hour or the golden hour. Like mm-hmm. people need to get to the hospital within an hour if possible.
Okay. That's different than the golden hour in photography.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it just means that, I mean, everybody's case is different, obviously, mm-hmm. but like chances are better the sooner you get people there, basically.
Right.
So George Hurst and his company developed this tool that would later come to be known as the jaws of life and patented it in the early 1960s. The common name, of course, comes from the expression of being snatched from the jaws of death.
These
are the jaws of life that snatch you first, I guess.
Oh, that's good.
But hopefully they don't snatch you, because that wouldn't be good. There are actually multiple hydraulic power tools used in extractions like this today. So you got a hydraulic spreader. This is kind of like reverse scissors. It spreads apart a gap in the metal. Imagine like prying open a crushed but partially open door.
And this is basically what I assumed the jaws of life were.
Mm-hmm. There's also a hydraulic ram that can be thought of as doing a similar kind of job, like spreading things apart, but maybe at more distance or more powerfully. It can be used to, say, unfold partially collapsed auto body frames. For example, if the passenger's legs are trapped under the dash of the car and the car is sort of folded in on you, the ram can be used to spread the car body apart so that they can get you out. And then the hydraulic cutter, which is what would be most analogous to shears, this would be like giant hydraulic scissors. This is used for cutting things off, so cutting off doors, but then also cutting through roofs and parts of body frames so that they can peel the roof off. These are often a safer solution than the old solution, which was circular saws, which took longer. They could throw sparks and debris at you, and they could injure the person trapped inside. If you've never seen Jaws of Life in action, it's actually it's kind of awe-inspiring. There are lots of videos of it online where they just go in and they're just slicing up the car body to get the people out.
Oh, wow. I wonder if there are ever like just live demos of this technology where they just like come out to the like local fair and because there's no, you know, at various fairs, you know, people want to see a car destroyed either by a Bigfoot truck or as part of some sort of a competition where you like pay, you know, a few dollars and like you beat the car with a, you know, with a baseball bat or something or a sledgehammer.
Yeah. Donate an old junk car and then they cut it up with the hydraulic cutters.
Yeah. And then it would be a demonstration of the technology. Surely that is done somewhere. I'm sure we'll hear from a listener with an example of just such a demo.
So if the shears that snip the thread of life are the abhorred shears of Atropos, what are the life-saving shears called? What's the Greek, is there a Greek goddess of like life or birth or something?
I mean, you could go with Persephone, I guess.
Okay.
You know, I also can't help but think about natural inspiration for scissors and shears, you know, because obviously even ancient peoples would have seen the crab or the scorpion. Mm. And granted, what we're talking about there are generally instruments for pinching,
right?
Not for the sort of shear cutting technique that we're talking about here. But I wonder if still these biological adaptations might have served as some level of inspiration for, you know, early attempts at scissors.
Yeah. Well, another thing you could look at would just be like teeth, like cutting teeth coming together to chop at things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our jaws are essentially scissors. I mean, it comes back to the jaws of life and the jaws of death, right?
Uh-huh. All right. Well, I guess that's our scissors adventure.
Yeah. This was a fun one. This was, you know, ultimately an example of a very simple invention and yet another one of these inventions that we cannot tie to a specific, even a specific time period necessarily, and certainly not to a specific inventor. Mm-hmm. But it's still just a fascinating chance to take a bit of just ubiquitous technology and stop and look at it in a new light and try to appreciate the glory of this particular invention and how it has changed you know, the way that we live as humans.
Would scissors be among your grave goods?
I'm thinking probably not. I don't really have any need for scissors in the afterlife. But maybe you should pack some just in case. I don't know.
You're going to be one of those shaggy-haired ghosts.
All right. If you want to check out more episodes of Invention, head on over to InventionPod.com. That's the website. And if you want to support the show, the best thing you can do is tell your friends about us. Make sure you have subscribed to the show. And if you have the power to do so, give us a nice star rating. Leave us a nice review. That sort of thing helps out the show in the long run.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@inventionpod.com.
Invention is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids. No plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.